delighted that you people are so interested. Yesterday, people were kind of sitting on their hands.
Yeah.
But your dynamic in your question is great, and you're going to benefit from it, I guarantee
you. And you, the folks that don't have computers, it takes me 20 minutes a day to do the 9 races. With both the time, the adjustments to par, class speed points, competitive quality rating, and I do race shapes besides. So it takes 15 to 20 minutes just to record 9 races, or I guess the races every day. It doesn't take a lot of time, even manually. Where the manual part gets to be inefficient, of course, is when you have to look back all the time for variants and this and that. That gets very inefficient. That's where the computer
to bring it back to reality, it probably takes about as much work as common time. Just about.
And I don't use projected times on the ratings part. My variants are not as accurate as somebody like Tom's because he uses projected times, and the class distance par variants are not as accurate as projected variants. So if you have a chance for using one or the other, you'd use the ones that are based on projected times. Those are better variants. Give me some feedback on the program. I'll give it to Mitchell. And I'm curious to see whether you like it and help.
Will Tom remember variants within it?
Yes.
Oh, sure.
Well, I mean in the software book.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. First, you'll have to enter them based on this conversion, and it will store them. Next time you rate a horse from that day, it won't even prompt you for the variant for that day because it already has. There's some clever little things in the program that are interesting. That's one of them. You don't have to enter the variant, the same variant. If the program has the variant,
it'll do that race.
It does it as daily track variant. If you're measuring a horse from April 15th, and the variant is slow 3 for that day, and 2 weeks later you're rating another horse from April 15th, it won't prompt you for the variant.
I was perfectly capable of sending out a +3 on one race and a -3 on another. Same distance. And that's just the way they shoot that. That's just part of using projected time. You want to be careful. The answer is try it. You got a 30 day.
Yeah. In his case, you got a variant for every race.
Be careful. Yeah. It's a by race variant. I think taking it back to a daily variant is a step backwards.
It is. It's less accurate. It's always less accurate.
But he showed you how to do it, how to combine the two ratings.
Yeah, it's simple, really. It really is kind of simple. Any other questions on these kind of
things? How much data do you need to get started? Is a month enough? If you were to go to the racetrack and watch all 9 races?
I think a month is about enough to get started. And then they start really repeating themselves in the horses. I think about 3 months is much better.
3 months.
3 months is much better.
So in this workout here, you had at least 3 months to go back to.
Oh yeah, I had. Well, only
you had even okay.
Yeah, I had been tinkering with it like a
you
year.
You had the Hollywood Park fall meet then as well, I said.
I had been tinkering with it about a year and a half prior to actually.
So you didn't just start December 26th then.
Right.
Wait a month.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have any ratings.
Okay.
So if you have charts that just go back for the past 4 or 5 months, I mean, what I'm saying is that I buy a form every day, regardless of whether I go to the track.
Yeah, well, you won't have these competitive quality ratings unless you're going to use the chart.
But I'm saying if I start going back a month or two, just handicapping some races, I can work up some numbers.
That's right. If I've been playing for the last 3 months, I would give you the ratings for the horses for those 3 months.
So you did that in February, you know, you gave us ratings for the ones that already...
Exactly, for the horses that had run up to that time at Santa Anita. And I had some of the people that attended that center, they started using it. And one guy in particular who I know is a professional player and just really gives a serious effort to everything he knew that comes out. He told me toward the end of February that he wasn't getting many winners with it. He was disappointed because he wasn't comfortable with the competitive quality ratings that he was giving. But he'd really changed his tune by late April.
I guess
he'd gotten a satisfactory number of winners, and he was enjoying it and felt more comfortable with it and was working better. And I think that's what happened. There's a real practice effect in using.
Did you say it takes at least a couple months or something
to
get good at calling 1 through 5?
I think to get those CQ ratings very reliable, so if you're comfortable with your own ratings, you're rating the same kind of races in the same way, it takes 60 to 90 days.
After you watch a race, do you try to match it among one of these 18, or do you just subjectively say, that's a 4, and write down a 4? Do you try to pinpoint
right
on
now,
one of these 18?
Right now, if I just went back to it, for example, right now, I'd find myself looking at those and doing that kind of
You try to categorize it among one of these 18 or so to see where it fits, as opposed to just subjectively looking at it and say, that's a 3 or that's a 4.
Well, when I'm doing it regularly, it's a very intuitive process for me. I've internalized those 18 innings, and it's a 3 or a 4. But, like, I haven't been playing now for 3 months. If I were to start playing tomorrow, I'd do a little bit of that matching. I'd be looking at those situations, and I'd look at a race, and I'd start matching them up. I would do that, and then a couple weeks later, you know, I'd be back in practice, like practicing any skill. And then it becomes more or less intuitive, and you keep doing it.
About time to take a little break. We're going to cover this afternoon some more things. We've done some great, don't think you cut it up.
I thought you said we're finished.
No, we're not. We'll take a little break. Well, hey, before we take a break, I want you to do something. Do it while they break. Let's go to the number of these. Number them from 10 to 1. The number of the pace lines, and then you just pick the pace line. The horse is going into a race today, and it's a race where you can get an exacta or a trifecta. And somebody tells you, because let's just say the reason you want to put this horse in is because it's got 241% of torque. We use that as a, that's why it's written right there. So you're saying, well, I got to pick some kind of a pace line to see how this horse projects today. While you're on your break, choose a number between 1 and 9.
You don't have the times or anything.
Don't worry about the time. Just
what's the length of the race?
Never mind, it's pattern recognition. Want to see?
It's just one horse.
This is study of pattern. Okay, the first thing you want to do is deal with some pattern recognition. You've all had a chance. Now, the reason that this race is very important is there was at one time when one of the last things people learn is pattern recognition and seeing things without putting the figures to the computer. It just stands out. And at Omaha, we were triggered to a $500-some-odd trifecta, a $100-some-odd exacta, and a nice win in place if you wanted to do it that way. Final race of the day. It's a nice way to go home. And this was the brainchild of Dick Schmidt, so I think that he should be the one to run you through it.
No, keeps it ready to go first.
No, keeps it ready. You did marvelously.
And you don't have any time, so all of this is the past performance of one horse. And it had been running at Axarbon. It up till here you can see it went very, very, very sour, 21 lengths here. And they laid it off for 9 months or so. And then they brought it back. And what I saw when I was looking at it, first thing I saw was this. That is a trigger. 241% APG, had a very high class trigger also. And obviously that's a 2-year figure. It only run twice this year and it done dismally both times. But what I did was just take a look at this line first, right after the layoff. I said, well, it ran pretty well. Not outstandingly, but pretty well, competitively, for the first.
I'm going to get a pinch of hands on the numbers first. Is that all right with you?
Oh, certainly.
Okay. Those who picked baseline number one, raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. How many? Read them again. I can't count that fast. You help. We're good at this kind of math.
18 or so.
Those who used baseline number 2? 0. Those who used number 3? Those who use number 4.
Nobody wants to commit.
Those who use number 9. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Those who use number 4. Those who use number 5. Number 6. Number 6 gets 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 7. Okay, well, that's everybody in the class.
Eight. No, it isn't. You haven't asked about 8 yet.
All right, who's for number 8? Oh, my goodness, we had a bigger class than I thought. 3.
People are voting twice.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, I missed it. Change me to 8.
All right, you get it.
He's in the way.
Where were you?
I'll tell you my logic. I used that with him. I was in 9.
Oh, okay.
He missed that.
Well, you better stay at 9.
Make it 3.5.
When you get home, you'll feel better staying at 9.
Okay.
You don't go just because the big winner goes. You don't have to follow.
No.
Whatever he went.
What I saw was a good effort on the layoffs for one quarter. And then the horse promptly fell into the toilet. The next race, it's in the lead, and off one at a nice pace. And then, it really dropped back. It was not embarrassed in this race. Mm-hmm. In this race, 13 and a half lengths, 11th, it's embarrassed. In this race, it's fifth in a 12 horse field. Certainly not a good race, but not a bad race. So what I did was I looked at this, and I see here is a horse that's improving. And what I did was I went back to number 8. Now, the reason I did was I looked at the pattern here. I say, here's
I want to
the
leave
pattern.
You at 9. I want to tell you why I wouldn't change it.
Okay.
It was race number 9 that triggered your having to take race number 8. And I want to make that point when you got to this.
Okay. Because here it is. You can see a more or less the same pattern. Two good fractions followed by some pretty dismal fractions. In this case, the horse was beaten out of sight, and then it comes back with a good race. What I'm doing is Blue Sky taking a shot, and if these don't work, by the way, you don't get to write Dr. Sargent says your method stinks. you're taking a shot. But what I'm doing is I'm saying, here's the pattern, here's what happened last time. I'm seeing the pattern repeated. I'm expecting this race to fall right here. And as a matter of fact, this horse led until about, I would guess, 50 yards from the line. It got passed by the obvious kid. But it did key. The horse went off at 17, 18, 20 to 1, something like that.
And incidentally, I want to get this in there. I got a call from ex-Arbor this morning. His next outing, which was yesterday, it finished 6th.
Yeah, really? I'll be darned. I didn't know that. Speaking of
outings,
Jose's Epistle. Yeah, this happened last weekend. And so what I'm looking at, and what I want you to think about here, is a pattern recognition. And you see that this horse has run this race, the one today's race already, down here. And don't feel, this is one of the first times I've ever done this, which is why I was getting such a raft of heat there. I very, very, very rarely do this. Please don't think that you now have license to go back and eat 10 lines on every horse.
When you say something like this, so you can.
But this is something that I would say on the local circuit, I might do once a month.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I wanted to ask, in terms of picking that particular pace line,
mm-hmm.
Regardless of the fact that you usually go back more than the top line, and going back that far, I thought I read, not that it's a rule, mind you, I'm not thinking about any rule,
right.
But I was thinking about being a little on the edge to go back and use the animals or the horses. The best race, which is why I chose number 6, because it looks like it's, in terms of early speed and falling back, it looks like maybe it's the second best race.
Uh-huh.
And
we don't know, but you might have got this horse in this today.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask. What would we have? If we assume that it is.
I'll tell you what, it'll be the next follow-up.
Oh, okay.
You have the whole past performance and everything. I only have one copy.
You see, because what I'm thinking about, based on this pace line selection, immediately, Estate pops into my mind from Friday, because I'm looking at the 14-1 down the hill.
Something to do every day.
No. I'm saying Estate had been off a month and a half, so the bad race would have put him in the toilet. So now I want to go back to one of his two best races. One of them was which a 14-1 down the hill from the rail where it was beaten a half length.
If you see the pattern, here is the key to the race. Here, a pattern of a not bad first race, half a good race, a or actually, if you think these are all six furlongs, that's two-thirds of a good, here's a third of a good race, two-thirds of a good race. Now we're going to say three-thirds of a good race. That's exactly what we got, three-thirds of a good race.
Did you run that down, that number one line and see how it matches up the rest of it? It wouldn't be good. That number one line would not produce yet. Yeah, 70 speed rating and 22 variance.
Particularly because the track running very sustained. Axarvin, we had had a torrential downpour the night before, and I must say, whoever put that together did a marvelous job. Santa Anita would have been needy for a week.
Could we kick this around a little more in terms of this is pace line selection? This is what it's, this is the core of it.
You kick it around all we want, but let's set some ground rules. We are looking not for the winner.
Not for the winner.
Not the winner.
Okay.
I mean, we think we have, and it turned out we did. What we're trying to do is key an exacta and a trifecta.
Okay.
You get one horse that you know is going to be second, and that's two-thirds of the trifecta. Now we know who's going to be first. So what we're going to do is, we just about have the winner. The thing we learned there from Elton Smith, who wins them all the time, is it's a 1-2 all. Or if there's a question about 1-2, it's a 2-1, 1-2 all for the trifecta. Go the whole field. I don't do that, but that's what they were preaching. So now we know we got the winner. Now we've got to find the place source. Then we'll go 1-2 all. That's what we're looking for now. As signs manifest by a horse, we're not looking to do any but place.
Okay. Well, 241%.
Mm-hmm.
Right off the bat, that's a key for us. Okay, and then the second race after a long layoff and the early speed. So the first thing, if I were looking at this horse in comparison to a cycle that he was going to come in and race well enough to be second or third or in the money for trifecta purposes or whatever.
That's all the evidence you need.
That's all you need.
That's right.
All the evidence that Rohammer.
Okay,
needs.
But now if I want to stick in the evidence and check, say, match up fractions.
And earliest counter energy, you know that too. Early is most likely to play because it's counter energy.
Exactly. But now in terms of fractional matchups, do I want to use line 8, or do I want to use what appears to me maybe his second best effort? In terms of, or is this a judgment call?
No, if you've reached the sophistication level, that you know that's good, that horse is, and you've had this in front of you, which you'll see in the follow-up, he's a 45-2 when he goes out in front, and the closest thing to him is a 46 today, so he's got a 3-length lead. And you're saying that a 3-length lead is enough to be the counter-energy horse. If you have enough sophistication to do that, you don't need this brilliant secondary deduction.
Okay.
But let me tell you something. You are in the minority. There are so few people who will make a decision unless they can find a line to justify their decision. Right?
Yeah.
Or alter a line, as you sometimes do to justify. Sure.
What I wanted to do with this, I debated on that number 8 line. I didn't want to go back that far. What I wanted to do is take the number 1 line and take the final piece of links and cut.
Well, then
you're anticipating a better race.
If you're sophisticated enough to do that, you can do that. But that is totally humanly manufacturing something. And a lot of us do it, believe me. I probably do it intuitively and run it when I make my bet. But what you got to do, you're talking about going back. You got to understand the difference between form cycle and condition cycle when you go back. The condition cycle demands recency. It's what is the horse's condition? How has it been performing within a recent cycle? The term condition cycle and form cycle by many authors is inadvertently, and maybe I'm incorrect and they're correct, but I think they're inadvertently misused. I'm looking at it from the standpoint of a behaviorist, and so is James Quinn, studying this stuff too. And a behaviorist does not start, when he's doing his studies of educational psychology, you don't start with a kid's, what he did last week, you want to go back to the very beginning of the kid's educational curve. To form those segments of linear continuum.
Well, Doc, now looking at it again, in terms of form cycle, if after the showing the early speed and being right there behind one, it looks like really any, mini, money, mo on 6, 7, or 8
right.
In terms of.
You're right, but you at least see that. That's the mark. This is condition cycle. This is form cycle, the whole spectrum. That's a zero plus, right?
Hmm?
That top is a zero plus for you.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Sure. Very much.
That's it. And if you do that, let's do that all the way down the line. This is kind of a staggered zero plus. This is a zero.
Depends on the length of the race, too.
Well, it's
all
six
furlong. Wrong.
Right.
You've got to put that down. Well, the horse, really, if you want to look at this horse, well, that would be a plain old plus.
Wasn't that first pace line almost gave me the same readout as the other one?
This one portends exactly what this one portends. It's just about the same.
Yeah, you have to look at the whole race. To do much more analysis, you're going to have to look at the whole race. And we'll give it to you.
If you've got to put it into the computer, if you can do it the way you do, that's the best way. Analyze and say, hey, I don't have to go through and put all these numbers in. He's back. I'm going to put him in my wheel.
What were the other APVs in this group?
That was stand-up.
Thank God. I don't think
well,
there's
anyone
else.
Sufficient.
Huh?
That's all you need.
Well, it's sufficient for me, but it's not sufficient for a handicapper.
Well, don't say it's sufficient, because it had a high APV in both of these races, too. This APV is from here down. No. These are zero and zero. So you cannot bet blindly.
No. I mean that and the improvement.
And the improvement.
Right.
Now you're talking.
That's what I mean.
But to say that APV triggers this is, it triggers the luck, but it doesn't trigger the bet.
Right.
If it triggers the bet, you're going to lose too before you catch. It only paid $5 for the place that the beta ran first. But it did trigger a big exacta and trifecta that I forgot about.
And besides which, it would have been 8 horses in the race with 200, you know. If the fact that it was a standout here makes us look, is there any justification for doing, now certain fields I'll run up the better automatically, like at Nanette, or better automatically, but there was a race, she had her base race within 4 that would have justified it. If you justify getting a pace line, this is the best way to do it.
This is a good exercise. I mean, this is mostly what you see when you're handicapping either on a daily basis or once a week or whatever. And
these are the ones that come up and bite you.
And as far as cutting this big length in half or something like that, I wouldn't do that. The reason is you're inventing a line. We know the horse can run this because it did it. This is reality down here. Here you've gone in the blue track. You're gonna do that. I don't see what. Turn your computer off and go. There's no point. Let's see. It looks like it's improving. I'll cut that down from 46 to 45. I'll make that a 2. I'll do this. You invented a line. Why bother with the computer? Right. All you're doing is confirming your own hypothesis here. Yeah. And since you loaded the dice before you threw them, the donut's going to come out. For that matter, I was reluctant to put this horse in the computer because I thought this was an outstanding line for him. Sometimes for line in computer. But as it worked out, the horse ran exactly as we had, not as I had hoped. I thought it might have been. I was hoping.
Another chip off is that when it ran early and failed before, they were higher class, would be called 7.5 as opposed to 5 higher class.
Oh,
in Omaha it is.
Indeed.
It's drastically higher at Omaha. The figures you will see, the reason I don't like to give all West Coast races is that you get West Coast oriented and somebody drops you in the middle of the plain somewhere, you better damn well be able to handicap any track in the world. And that's where the money is. These tracks,
money
track, and River Downs in Cincinnati. You can walk into there, and
as a matter of fact, Doc, isn't it true that, excuse me, where you have cheaper tracks, less inexpensive racetracks, where the difference between 5,000 and 7,500 is greater than 12,500 to 16,000?
Divide 5 by 7,75 and see what the percentage is.
Right.
But it's not, that's very good, the observation, but it's true. A lot of people out here do what's $2,500. The real reason you win is the lack of sophistication of the people. They didn't have James Quinn's books in any of the books. You know, that fact, you
It was ATV on a steak dinner.
You sure? That's why I said I wasn't sure that he started.
247, I think it was.
Yeah.
247%. I think it was 247%. It's in my Friday form, but I know it was over 240.
I went to Hollywood Park, went 5 for 5, and I don't think I went back 1-2. I worked the whole day.
I wish I knew where you were. I would come. I was out there too, but I didn't do that.
In the case of a state here, where he'd been off since the 29th of June. Now the top line, I didn't run the top line. It just didn't look like it would fit. But what I'm saying is that on a 45-day layoff or a 60-day layoff, if the top line is bad, it only makes sense to go back at least to the second, not the second best line, but maybe the line underneath that one, because the reasoning is the last line is what caused it to go on a layoff.
Don't
right?
use the line that put the horse in the barn. Tom
okay.
taught me that
okay.
first week I was in.
Okay, but now, if you don't use that line, which you're not, that's why I wanted to get back to this. If we're not going to use the line and put it into the barn, should we use the line that made it almost a champion on the day that it ran well?
Not doing it because it almost made him a champion. We're doing it because it's almost precisely the same as his last year.
Hey, see, look, the picture. Look at this one to this one. If you use this line, you violate the pattern.
No.
That fourth line comes back to 3 good races in a row.
Right.
This one had 1 3 good races.
Right. But what I'm saying is that in the case of the state, he had 2 dynamite races.
I'm just saying,
the top one was the swiftest one at 14-1, where it led all the way to the last jump. It was beaten the half length. I saw the race that day at Santa Anita down the hill. It was beaten the half length, went off at a good price. The second best race was also down the hill, only that race was slower, 15 and change. So I knew I wasn't going to use the top line. As a matter of fact, I didn't even bet the race, but I had this dilemma about should I use the 14-1, which is the best one in his past performances, of which he may not run back to, but even if I were to use the second one, the second best, that would have probably placed him on top or
the
worst.
He won the race.
He won the race. He paid 15 bucks.
You could have used another one.
Okay.
You probably could have used the last line and still made a case for him because he had a speed jam. He had 3 horses that could crank about 44 and change.
Okay, but I can't tell my computer that he had a speed jam. I mean, the computer recognizes...
You're interpreting his early late. Yeah. You don't tell your computer. But the point is that you probably would have won the race whichever one you'd used, but you wouldn't have been number 1W. We're not looking for number 1W anymore, number 2W. We've got other things now
right. exactly.
that help us to support that with early
exactly.
late and percentage early.
Well, the 247%, I know I'm not going to use the last line. Like I said, if you're not going to use the last line, this is why I think this is such a good exercise,
yeah.
because it can either clue you in to use, maybe if you're dealing with a real good classified allowance horse or maybe a grade 2 type horse, you could pick his best line and he would run back to that. I just didn't think if you're dealing with, say, a claiming horse, say a mid-range claimer, to go back to use the best race, because in the manual, it is advised against, and I have tried to do that and been burned most of the time.
Because most of the people I met in the beginning always wanted to use the best race. Just automatic thing. I think Ray Talbot wrote it, and Matheson wrote it, a lot of people wrote it. The horse qualifies today, go back to his best race. Well, you get a lot of big high payouts that way, but not very often.
Right.
You wait a long time. So we just wanted to warn against that. So that the person would know that he was kind of cheating. I said, unless it's the last race,
exactly.
you can't very well ignore the last race unless it's a wire-to-wire job in a manner the horse never did before. But the pace line selection, I think that what you did was right because you won. That's the empirical standard by which you must judge your...
No, I put the best race into the computer when he came out up top. I just forgot about it. I didn't bother the race. My day was over. Yeah, he won. I didn't feel bad because I felt like I had not cheated exactly, but It wasn't Secretariat's line that I was...
Well, at least you gave it the proper thought. You realized that you could be making an over-evaluation by doing. That's what's important.
See, he hadn't been out in 45 days, and the race took place, I believe, in February. So, the fact that the layoff...
You did a smart thing, I would say, just without seeing it. I'd say that you're, the basis on which you're telling me these things is based on sound and solid judgment. And as long as you keep making those, you're winning, aren't you?
I'm winning. I just hate to let $15 mutuals go.
That is the judge of whether you're doing it right. If you're winning. If you're not winning, then you're doing something wrong. You know, even if you're doing it right, you're doing something incorrect if you're not winning. Somewhere along the line, but you're winning, so then your judgment, you can justify your judgment by what you're doing. And your judgment could be, somebody could say you're nuts. But if you're winning with it, then your sensitivity is for what you're doing is greater than anybody else's judgment. You keep doing what you're doing. That's what's correct.
Several people can say you're nuts. Pick baselines like that.
I don't think it's nuts. I do it all the time. I don't think it's nuts.